Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls Media Roundtable. Later in the show, we'll discuss media coverage of ongoing ICE brutality in Minnesota. But first, we're discussing the deadly crackdown following the most recent nationwide protests in Iran. The latest wave of protests started on December 28th in Tehran's bazaars over soaring inflation, but quickly spread to more than 180 cities and towns across the country, turning into massive demonstrations demanding the regime's downfall. As with previous protests, Iranian authorities have responded with deadly force. A near total communications blackout has made independent verification and coverage extremely difficult, but sporadic images and eyewitness accounts from inside Iran paint a horrifying picture of the extent of the government's crackdown. Despite the blackout, people have managed to share videos and messages using Starlink, which is helping journalists and human rights organizations better understand the scope of what has happened. Earlier this week, the AP reported that Iran eased some restrictions by allowing people inside the country to make phone calls abroad, but the regime did not ease restrictions on the internet or permit texting. Although Iranians were able to call abroad, people outside the country could not call them, according to several people who told the Associated Press. An Iranian in London told the BBC what she heard from a loved one inside Iran.
A family member called me around sort of 10:30. And very, very brief call. They just called to say that they're safe. They and their wife are safe. And that was it. They're in the north of Iran. So they're in an area called Gorgan, just north of Tehran, quite kind of on the outskirts of the town. So quite rural area. And they said that basically everyone's been killed. And I asked, do they personally know people? And they said family members, colleagues, neighbors, like, you know, in every household that's happening. And they had just called to say they're safe. Very brief call, got off the phone. Also just told me that they had told their daughter, who I know. And that was it.
That was an Iranian in London telling the BBC what she heard from a loved one in Iran. Yusuf Yadzi, a professor at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, told NPR about his recent visit to Iran.
In the neighborhood where my mother's house is, there is a large square there and a large group were gathering there. I could hear them, and I went out at 8 p.m. on Thursday night to join them and to observe.
What did you see?
It was about 200-300 young people, mainly a few older folks like me, and then mostly younger people. And they're very peaceful, chanting slogans, mostly, you know, death to the dictator. And there were a few little more mission-driven people, I would say. Maybe five people in that crowd that really were trying to lead chants, facing the riot police. And they pulled some pavers up from the sidewalk and started throwing them at the riot police. And then the riot police responded with tear gas. Like, one young lady standing next to me, was the laser landed on her shirt, and she thought she had been shot or something. She was freaking out. So that it was a matter of a lot of fear, because these are young people, incredibly fierce, brave, strong.
That was Yusuf Yadzi, a professor at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, telling NPR about his recent visit to Iran. The censorship and fragmented information coming in from Iran has left journalists struggling to cover the protests and the brutal crackdown. Joining us with the latest are three guests. Amir Rashidi is a cybersecurity and policy expert and digital rights advocate, and director of digital rights at the Mian Group, a nonprofit focused on Iranian internet censorship and digital rights. Hi, Amir. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Shireen Jafari is a reporter for The World, focusing on the Middle East. Shireen has covered conflicts in Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq, and Ukraine, and her reporting focuses on current events, politics, conflict, and human rights. Hi, Shireen. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, good to be with you.
Irshad Alijani is an award-winning journalist at France 24, specializing in coverage of Iran, Afghanistan, Syria, and Iraq. In 2020, Irshad was awarded the French Diplomatic Press Association Prize for his investigative report, Iran's Hidden Slaughter, which exposed the Islamic Republic's crackdown on nationwide protests back in November 2019. Hi, Irshad. Thank you for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Before we dive in and talk about the protests and the brutal response by the authorities in Iran, I want to ask you all if you've been able to connect with friends and family in Iran. As I said, according to the AP, people have been able to call out, but they haven't been able to receive calls. So, Amir, have you been able to reach any family or friends in Iran?
Yes. My mom called me last night, but I have to say that's not a guarantee. You know, sometimes, you know, the connectivity phone call is restored, but there is no guarantee that it's going to be restored for the whole day.
And what did you hear from your mom?
Just exactly like the soundbite you played, just a few words, we fine. And you know, these days you can find in any family, in any group, that someone being killed or being shot. She told me someone from our friends, close friends, family close friends, being shot and dead in Friday.
Hmm. What about you, Shireen? Have you been able to reach friends and family?
I haven't been able to reach anyone, unfortunately, but I got word from a friend of a friend that my family is okay. That's basically the extent of what I've been able to hear.
Ah, and that must be so hard.
Yeah, it's day 9. So, just like one of many people, many Iranians outside of Iran, sort of waiting and trying to get help, word from their loved ones inside Iran. I'm just one of many people.
Right. What about you, Arshad?
At the beginning of this interview, I wanted to apologize to you and your audience. I haven't slept for last 48 hours, so it's a little bit foggy. So it's possible that I freeze or search for words. Mm. Sorry for that.
No problem at all.
I have some limited connection to Iran, but honestly, I have kept them for only professional use. I have no information about my immediate family. The only thing that I know that is one member of my extended family was killed in Tehran. No, I don't have that much information about my family. I haven't talked to them for the last couple of days.
I'm so sorry. And not sleeping for 48 hours. I thank you for joining us to give us the latest. It's hard to get information about what is happening, but there are all reports and pictures showing protesters being shot at close range, execution style. Again, these protests began on December 28th and spread to more than 180 cities and towns. Iran has experienced anti-government protests for years, but they've really intensified in the recent past. There have been smaller demonstrations. We've covered a lot of these on your call, including the historic 2022 Woman Life Freedom Uprising. This time, eyewitness testimony suggests the government's response has been particularly brutal. According to NetBlocks, internet connectivity dropped to nearly zero on January 8th. The government cut access in 2019 and again in 2022, but this one appears to be far more severe. Amir, you follow this very, very closely. Can you talk about how this communications blackout differs from past blackouts?
First of all, I'm happy you're calling it communication blackout because I'm hearing people calling it internet shutdown, which is not the case because you don't have internet, you don't have you don't have local network, you don't have text messages, phone call, mobile call. I'm working on internet shutdown, censorship, surveillance in Iran for over the past 20 years, and I haven't seen anything close to what we are experiencing now. And I'm not really optimistic that it's going to be, you know, internet or communication going to be restored anytime soon. Let me put it in some sort of picture in your audience head so they can maybe have a better understanding. Imagine you're sitting in complete darkness and the only source of light you have is just a candle. And all of a sudden, something not big, like finger cut would happen. You're trying to find something to, you know, stop the bleeding. Imagine how you can find something to stop the bleeding. That's kind of the situation where we talk about the communication blackout we are experiencing in Iran.
So we're talking about everything going offline, is that right?
Yes, quite everything, yes.
How is this possible? How have they been able to do this?
Wow, that's a long story, but long story short, everything started from back in 2009, which, by the way, back then I was in Iran protesting against Ahmadinejad government stalling our vote. And they realized how people using the internet to not only send their voices out, nationally or national-wide or internationally, but also using internet for mobilizing against the government. So a supreme leader, Ali Khamenei, issued an order creating all these, infrastructure, all these policy bodies, National Supreme Council of Cyberspace, and everything like that. And they invest a lot on creating something that had multiple names, from Halal Internet to National Internet to finally got the official name, National Information Network, NIN. And Ahmadinejad's administration were not, the kind of people who can get the job done. Rouhani's administration, they were all, people from graduating from MIT and all these top universities. And finally, in his second term, Rouhani, they have created this local infrastructure that enabled them to shut down internet in a way that would be less damage in local businesses. However, this time we are seeing that they are dealing with the most serious existential threat. So they panicked and they even shut down the local network, this national information network.
Mm. Shireen, can you talk about how this is affecting your reporting, trying to figure out what's actually happening, how many people have been killed?
Yeah, it's made it really challenging. Reporting on Iran has always been difficult. When you think about reaching people inside Iran, it's always been challenging. But also, when protecting your sources, when you talk to people, you want to make sure that they are not arrested or somehow harassed by the government. Just to give you a bit of background here, even speaking with foreign media can be an offense in Iran. The government calls foreign media the enemy. And sometimes this can be used against people who talk with foreign media, for example, if they talk to the BBC or other media outlets. So there's always been that level of challenge and difficulty. But now, we can't even reach people on the ground to talk to them. And then, the question is, how do we know what's happening? How do we know the information that we are getting is reliable? And how do we verify that information? So those are all questions that we as reporters have been grappling with since the start of the shutdown 9 days ago. And it's been really challenging. I can get into how I have been dealing with that if you want a bit later.
You can please talk about
for
it
me,
now.
Yeah, sure. So for me, I've always relied on a network of people that I trust, and I have built that network over the years of my reporting. And really, this network has been helpful in helping me find information and sort of piece together what's happening on the ground. And that network includes people who work with NGOs, humanitarians, doctors, lawyers, and so on. And they have experience working in this extremely opaque and closed-off environment in Iran. And they know how to get around that. And that's, something that's been helpful to me. There are also other ways that I have been trying to sort of sift through the information that we've been getting from the ground. You can't really rely on the government figures and narrative, of course. But what we can do is pick up on threats from what they say and what they air on state TV, and use that as a starting point to dig deeper. It's kind of like detective work, you follow the leads and gather evidence and build your case. But that also requires knowledge and experience in how this government works and how it creates narratives and puts out information, which outlets tend to be more accurate and which ones are not so much. So you can sift through the noise and come to a conclusion that you can stand by as a reporter. And then finally, I think what I've done over the past, 10 days in telling this story and reporting this story is to be honest and transparent with my audience about where and how I have gotten that information that I'm presenting them with. So, for example, yesterday I did a story about sort of gathering eyewitness accounts from the ground since the protests started last Thursday. And I was, putting together what people saw on the ground and how the protests sort of evolved over the days. And I got that information through an NGO, a friend that I know at an NGO, and that person connected me with people on the ground in Iran. And I said in my report, these voices that you are hearing in my story, this is how I got this information. So we need to be transparent and honest with our audience about where we're getting this information and to be clear and honest about what we don't know. I mean, the figures, for example, that are being put out about the number of deaths and a lot of other information that's coming out, we just don't have confirmation yet. And we just have to be very clear with that. We're reporting this in real time. We have limited resources, and this is a fast-moving story. And people want fast information, emotions are high. People tend to want to believe what they want to believe. But our job as a reporter is to try our best to tell the truth as best as we can.
So in your conversations with people who left Iran, what did you hear?
What I heard was that, there was a lot of surprise on the extent of the level of the crackdown this time around. People are used to protests in Iran. This is not the first time that protesters are out on the streets. But the level of the crackdown and the number of the people who have been killed is just so surprising and shocking to many people that I've talked to. And, this one person that I talked to, he said, at first, the protests were, kind of not jovial, but it was just as a gathering. There were families there, there were kids there, grandparents with their grandkids, and they were just walking on the streets, not even threatening anybody, chanting slogans and, participating in a protest. But then on Friday, security forces started cracking down, and that's when things intensified. They started shooting at protesters. They said they had no regard for the safety of who is in that crowd. You had children, you had families, you had young people, and they just fired indiscriminately at the crowd. And then the communications crackdown. Part of it is also for stopping people from gathering and organizing future protests, but also it's a way to intimidate people and prevent people from coming out on the streets.
One protester, Yazi, told the New York Times the regime is on a killing spree. Someone else said, I personally saw a young man get shot in the head. I witnessed someone get shot with a bullet to the knee. The person fell to the ground unconscious, and then security forces gathered over him. Irshad, what would you like to add about the difficulty and how you go about verifying information? And is there anything you would like to share from people that you have spoken with who are in Iran or who have left Iran?
Yep. I have a very strange image from what I hear from people in Iran, and it's like having internet access has effectively become a crime. People are terrified. Anyone who still has internet tries to hide it, almost as if they were hiding a weapon at home. Imagine even the comment section contact feature on the sports website or the shopping apps have been shut down by order of the regime. That's how much authorities are so afraid of people talking to each other or communicating with the outside world. And I think information is coming mainly my personal experience. Information is coming mainly from Starlink or through a small number of VPNs that start working. Some comes from people living near the borders who are able to connect using mobile networks from neighboring countries. And as Amir explained, it's unprecedented. And I think it's having communication outage at this level because we have unprecedented massacre in Iran right now. I believe, I'm thinking for days and days, I'm trying to find something, another massacres in recent history in Iran. I don't find, really. I think since major famine following the First World War in Iran, there has been no killing on this scale in Iran's modern history. At France 24 Observer's Desk, we analyzed several videos from Iran that strongly suggest summary executions are taking place in the streets. Protesters lying on the ground with gunshot wounds to the temple. I worked on many sad incidents around the world. I covered ISIS in Syria. I covered Taliban taking over Afghanistan. I worked on Israel's war on Gaza. Honestly, I have never been touched with the level of violence in the videos until now. It's altering, and I talked to an eyewitness. His identity cannot be disclosed for security reasons, but due to his professional background, he is able to identify causes of death. And her sister was killed during one of the protests in a city in northern Iran. And he described what he described, it was horrifying. The family was forced to examine more than 400 bodies in a morgue, body over body. The morgue, it wasn't a small morgue. It wasn't even Kahrizak that we see in the videos. Tiny morgue somewhere in Iran. And they have moved around the bodies, one on the other, to find and identify her sister. And most of them being killed by gunshot wounds to the head. So I think that the level of this level of violence, sheer savagery, explains why we have this internet, this communication outage in Iran. Because I think the information is coming mainly. In communication, artists become a tool, become a weapon to they want to control the narrative.
That is Irshad Alajani, an award-winning journalist at France 24. In 2020, he was awarded the French Diplomatic Press Association Prize for his investigative report, Iran's Hidden Slaughter, which exposed the Islamic Republic's crackdown on nationwide protests back in November 2019. The response was very brutal back then, but all of our guests and eyewitnesses say that this time the response is even worse. Shireen Jafari is a reporter for The World, focusing on the Middle East. Amir Rashidi is a cybersecurity and policy expert, digital rights advocate, and director of digital rights at the Mian Group, a nonprofit focused on Iranian internet censorship and digital rights. And again, just to repeat this, there is a massive communications blackout, so it's not just the internet. Amir, the AP reported that Iranians were able to make outside calls, but they could not receive calls. There are also reports about Starlink giving people some access. Can you give us an update on Starlink?
Sure. But just before getting to Starlink, just quickly, let me say solidarity with people in Uganda. There is 72 hours internet shutdown also in Uganda. Unfortunately, I don't think they get as much attention as we are getting. And unfortunately, internet shutdown became, as Ershad says, a weapon all around the world to suppress people during the election or any time, you know, just people want to protest against the government. Starlink, I guess even with the Starlink in compared to, you know, probably Uganda, we are privileged. There are not a lot of Starlink dishes in Iran. My estimate is something around 50K or something like that. And they are expensive. Again, we are privileged to get Elon Musk to waive the subscription fee, which is a huge help in this current economy in Iran. That's really big help. But again, even the stations are expensive. I'm seeing that, you know, a VPN being connected to a Starlink is being sold in Iran right now with like 1 million tuman. If I convert it to USD, is nothing. It's like $7 or something. But 1 million tuman in Iran is not really, comparable to seven USD. They tried to stop Starlink too. They kind of jammed the GPS and some other technology, very much similar to what we have seen Russian have done in Ukraine. But again, fortunately, they couldn't stop Starlink. It still is functioning, operational. There are some other tools as well, which mainly were kind of developed by, you know, the Internet Freedom Project within the U.S. State Department. But let me don't talk about those things because I might release some information that put people at risk inside the country. But again, yes, Starlink is the main source of communication. I'm afraid when we look at their plan for future, that might be the only way that we can get people's voice out of the country and get them to communicate in the safe possible way.
Well, and thank you for bringing up what's happening in Uganda, because it's so hard to keep up with all of this. They've got a presidential election coming up, and so this is happening right before that's taking place. And even though there is a blockade, some images are getting out. There's an image that made its way out that shows rows and rows of body bags. And the New York Times has this piece. This is via Reuters. In this New York Times piece, we learn that hospital workers say protesters had been coming in with pellet injuries, but they're now arriving with gunshot wounds and skull fractures. One doctor called it a mass casualty situation. So even though there is a blackout, Amir, some images and videos are getting out.
Yeah, again, mainly through a Starlink connection and some other technologies, but very, very limited, very, very limited. Even those technologies, except Starlink, besides Starlink, there is risk using them, and also not a lot of people can access to those tools. But again, yeah, Starlink is the main. But let me say something. Seeing this kind of shutting down communication and internet being globally like a weapon being used against civilian, I think what we need is we need to have a political willingness and the right policy and, of course, money, which, again, all these big tech can help to tackle this issue. I mean, international body like ITU, Telecommunication Union, even though they don't have any enforcement power, but still they have something available at their disposal, that in their toolbox, that can help people in terms of the law, legality, and policy to make these tools more accessible for people who are living in these kind of authoritarian countries. This is what I hope we see: political willingness, right policy, and of course money, which is a big problem, I guess, all over the place, all over around the world.
Well, we'll definitely do a show about that, and we'd love to have you back. In our remaining minutes, because so much is happening, Shireen, can you give us an overview of what life is like in Iran today for activists and for average people? I know it's a big question, but just to give a sense to people of what it's like to live under this regime.
Yeah, I mean, it's very challenging. The protests, you might recall, started at the bazaar with the, rising inflation and the currency rate that has been falling dramatically in the past year or so. So people are really finding it difficult, almost impossible for many, to just make their basic living, just to put food on the table. And there's a lot of unemployment. So the economy has had a huge impact on people's satisfaction of the government. But right now, the protests have moved away from just the economic issue. People that I have been able to reach, they say, even if tomorrow, one man that I talked to yesterday, he said that even if tomorrow the economy is better, we won't back down. And this is now about a regime change, not just the economy. So life has been really difficult. And it's not just the inflation, but also the sanctions. The U.S. sanctions over the past years have had a huge impact on Iran's economy. Iran hasn't been able to sell its oil like it used to, which is the goal of the sanction, right? That it sort of makes it difficult for the government to make revenue from selling oil abroad. But that has had a huge impact on the daily lives of people as well. And that's why you see people on the streets. But again, going back to the reasons behind these protests right now, is not just about the economy, but the fact that this government has not allowed any social freedoms. There has been some improvement in terms of, people, you might see a lot of people on the streets now, but the protests haven't really died down since the last time in 2022, when people were out on the streets. So much has changed since then. And this is because of the work that young people have done in Iran. For example, in Tehran, if you go, you see a lot of women in cafes and so on, not wearing their mandatory hijab as a sort of civil disobedience. And that can be really costly, as we know, because of the past experience with the protests. It started with a young woman, Mahsa Jina Amini, who was killed because reportedly she wasn't wearing the hijab properly. So, young people are paying huge price for advancing these social freedoms. And if you don't see them, if you don't hear about protests happening, it doesn't mean that they are not pushing back against these rules and these restrictions. Right now, it's not just about the economy. It's about social freedom, and the people that I've talked to, they say we want this government gone.
And Irshad, what would you like to add?
Maybe I wanted to add two points at the end. One of them is another point that we are in the middle of such a savagery with a staggering number of deaths, but maybe we have forgotten the number of injured protesters. We don't know how many. Normally for each 100 injured, there are one or two killed people, protesters. So if you consider thousands of deaths, that we don't know exactly how many thousand, but consider thousands of deaths, how many people are injured. And I talked to a doctor some days ago, and he said, I don't know anymore how many eyes have been amputated in our hospital so far. And he said, I counted up. He said I used to count them, but at one point I lost the counting, and he said maybe 500 eyes. I don't know anymore. Mm. So that's one point that we, I think maybe we miss. And another point is that maybe there are no massive protests in Tehran or some other cities, but I have eyewitnesses that they confirm that they are smaller and shorter in the time meaning of shorter protests. There are protests, not protests, 1,000, 2,000 in those, in this or that neighborhood. And I think in some way it's more impressive and it takes more bravery to do that, because 1 week ago, 2 weeks ago, people knew that there are hundreds of thousands of other people in the streets and they are chanting against the regime. But people who come out in their own neighborhood, some hundreds, 2,000, 1,000 people, in this or that neighborhood. I can name, for example, I know for a fact that 3 nights ago in Gorgon neighborhood, there was a snap protest, 1,000, 2,000 people. And it takes more bravery because they are cut off not only the outside world, from other neighbors of Tehran. They don't know what's going on in the other neighborhoods of Tehran. So, right. So you don't know what happened after this level of violence. How the Basijis or IRGC will treat you. So I think in some way it takes more bravery now to come out for this snap protest.
Well, we will continue to follow this and we would love to have all of you back. Thank you so much for your work, especially because it's so difficult. And as you said, Irshad, you and so many Iranians are not getting much sleep right now because you cannot reach your friends and family. Irshad Alajani is an award-winning journalist at France 24. Shireen Jafari is a reporter for The World. Amir Rashidi is a cybersecurity expert and director of digital rights at the Mian Group, a nonprofit focused on Iranian internet censorship and digital rights. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And nice. We should say, a doctor told the Center for Human Rights in Iran that the images and data broadcast by international media do not represent even 1% of the reality because the information simply does not reach them. We will definitely continue to cover this in the weeks to come. Coming up after a break, we will talk about media coverage of the violent ICE raids and arrests in Minnesota. This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. We'll be back after this.